We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. They aren't affected by tariffs because their clothing products never left the U.S. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Support American-made tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
They want more time. We knew this would probably happen at some point. The defense saying, you know that the trial that's supposed to start here in like 2 months and we've been getting ready for it for roughly 3 years. Yeah, that wasn't enough time. We got to look more into the background of Koberger. We have to learn more about what made him who he is today. It really feels like they're, you know, I think they're on let's prevent him from being killed mode at this point. Joining me to discuss, Robin Drieg, retired FBI special agent, chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program. Is that what you're gleaning out of this with the defense saying we need more time? Because a lot of the needing more time seems to focus not so much on his innocence, but explaining him so a bullet doesn't go towards his chest.
I think I've been trying to do that for a year now.
Yeah.
And it's all they have. It's at a certain point, you know, you give defense a lot of credit for the effort, but at a certain point, there's only so much extra credit you can turn in to try to sway the teachers to your side. And I think she's done. I mean, and it just looks to desperation at this point, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, it is a capital case, so they do tend to take longer, and they really got to make sure those T's are crossed and those I's are dotted, and it's not the other way around where you have a T dotted and an I crossed, because that ends up being rounds for an appeal.
It's going to get appealed no matter what.
It's going to get appealed no matter what, but the grounds are the point, you know?
Right.
Like, what are the grounds you're building this idea on? Which is essentially what they're doing right now. Whether or not they expect it to be granted this stay in the trial, they got it on record. So after he's convicted, they can go back and say, see, look at the record. We needed to have these things, and they didn't give it to us. So this is, now, that to be granted, you know, really depends on the case in chief itself. And if a judge is going to say, yeah, it really wasn't fair, or the judge is going to say, yeah, nice try. Have a nice day. But I with something like this, should we grant them a little more time just to be on the safe side? Because you don't want to end up going through this for the next 5 to 15 years. Should he be found guilty, and then it just goes appeal, maybe something gets granted, and they got to go through all of it again. You have to have the family go through all the hell again, too. She's throwing a lot of stuff at the wall. This is another strand of spaghetti. Is this one we should look at, or the state should look at and say, yeah, we'll give you a little more time? I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't know what they would find. Again, I'm not the lawyer. I'm not the judge. I like what the judge has been doing to give them plenty of time. I mean, I think the judge has done a really good job to do all he can to mitigate, like you said, laying that foundation for the appeal so there's nothing there when they actually do. At the same time, though, so in order to I think to reasonably give them more time, they'd have to be more specific about for what.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you actually had a psychiatrist or a criminal psychologist come in and say, well, we actually have this thing we're looking at specifically that we want to test him for, we want to evaluate for, so we can bring more experts to testify on, that would make sense. But right now, they want more time to do a fishing expedition.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you get more time for fishing. I think it would have to be more specific than that.
It seems like that's all Ann Taylor's been trying to do is fish on this one. That's got to be a 100%. Difficult job for her to, because at some point, like the look, there's no fish left in this little pond you got here. It doesn't matter that Brian is sitting there going, look, a koi, look, a perch. And there's like, no, there's nothing in the water, Brian. There really is nothing there. You got to kind of bring him to reality. But I don't know that he's capable of that. His attorneys are arguing that they can't select the right experts without finishing their profiling and trauma investigation. So expert witnesses, you know, I don't want to say they're a dime a dozen, but, you know, there's all different types of expert witnesses out there. There's some that are really good and there's some that are not so great. And you pay them to help testify for you on different areas of whatever your case may be. And this one, I guess it would be to the mind of Brian Koberger of how he couldn't have possibly done this. I'm wondering if they're really running into the issue of they can't find an expert witness, period, that will go onto this case and somehow stand up for Brian, because they're going to have their own data that they're coming in saying, here's how this works. And if that doesn't go in line with what their story is, that's not going to help Brian. I don't know if they're finding anybody is what I'm wondering.
Well, I don't think there's anyone to find, because I think they're trying to do one of two things. Again, I don't know what they're actually doing, but I would think that they're either trying to find someone to say, because of his background, his behavior arc, he's incapable of this behaviorally, or they're trying to mitigate it, saying he did this because of all these things, so it's not, he's not responsible for the actions because of this, to try to lessen the impact so he doesn't get the death penalty. In either case, both would require, I think, a whole new psychological profile and evaluation that just doesn't exist. And so I think they're having a hard time finding an expert, because they're trying to find an expert to give him a diagnosis that is non-existent. They want to find, they're trying to create something that's just not there, just kind of like the autism attempt they made. You know, after she mentioned it, we did all the research we could to find cases of that being used in cases like this, and it doesn't exist. And so that kind of fell flat. So I really think there's a lot of invention attempts going on here. She's trying to psychologically innovate her way to keep him alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a challenge to do, is because this industry of of psychology has been around a long time. The DSM is very, very encompassing of all the different psychological effects and psychiatric effects on people. And there's nothing that she can grab onto, or an expert can grab onto, because all the experts are saying, oh yeah, it doesn't fit.
There's nothing to grab onto that works in their favor.
No.
I mean, there's a lot to grab onto, but it all points to Brian being the guy who did this. And that's the interesting part of all this. And I found it fascinating where they go down this road of, well, he couldn't have possibly done this. And they've argued everything now, from autism to some sort of physical disorder that he couldn't have possibly. He doesn't have the, like, it's just, it's one thing after another. Was it a wise idea? I mean, to go down the road of he's mentally inept or incapable of doing this sort of thing, or it's, well, he's totally capable of doing this thing because this is how he thinks. I don't feel either is a win for him, because in a lot of ways you go down the mental angle of this, and that's really, you know, what drives him. There's some sort of mental problem going on. And it all kind of just goes to the same place where you look at a person with the profile that we understand of Koberger, and it makes you understand him more, but you understand him to very likely be the type of human being who would be capable of doing this sort of thing. It's not the other way around. It's not like, oh, he's this autistic child who sits in the corner and rocks. No, it's not. it's not helping their case.
No, it's the I keep thinking every time she floats an idea out here, to do one of these things as a defense, I just keep thinking of politicians. Every time a politician is trying to win an election, they kind of float a new thing out there, kind of see what the public response is. And then if it grabs and they're going down that road, if it doesn't grab, then they distance themselves from it, move on to the next. I just keep imagining she keeps floating these different theories out there to see if anyone grabs onto it. And nothing works because it's all bunk.
Yeah, it very much appears to be. They also have issue with Dateline. Dateline exposed too much. And I know the judge is not happy about this. He's doing his own investigation, digging deep into everybody's cell phones, who said what, where did this leak come from? I don't blame him. That's an important thing to do. But there's always going to be leaks. It just is kind of what happens. They're saying because this information is now out there in the ether, and everyone has watched Dateline, although not everybody watches Dateline and not everybody follows this case. I find far more people when I'm talking to folks out there, you like, what do you do? And what cases are you following where you bring it up and you think people are going to know about it? No, I think maybe 2 in 10 maybe know about this. If that, maybe 1 in 10, at least that have any sort of deep knowledge on the case. I think that's even smaller. But they're saying that this has tainted the jury pool so much. Again, it's their argument for the defense. She's doing her job. But is there any legitimacy to this where, well, these pieces of evidence should be thrown out because the jury's too tainted? Or, again, just another piece of spaghetti, but maybe this time it's a piece of penne, which really doesn't stick to the wall.
So I think the judge is doing a great job by investigating so he can deal with that action. But because, it goes to any sort of appeal and things like that. But if he didn't throw out their motion to get rid of DNA, he's not going to get rid of this. Yeah. So I think we're solid. I think we're solid on everything Dateline had. I don't think anything's going to get thrown out. The judge seems very reasonable. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, is it going to taint the jury pool? Maybe. But one of the reasons why I think, you know, prosecution is so silent on many things is because they're solid on what they got. Yep. You know, she keeps, so if we deal with this a lot with the cases and even the Karen Reed case, mm-hmm. You know, when you lack substantive, tangible forensic evidence, like data, which is objective, you, the only thing you have left is subjective. And so I think the prosecution's got lots of objective data and evidence. And so defense can't counter it, as we're seeing from these stabs in the dark by subjective opinions. And so I think that's what she's trying to do, is trying to cause reasonable doubt by subjective opinions and ideas to counter everything that's going to be coming at her.
Yeah. Third party culprit. That's the new argument.
Sorry to keep laughing.
I want to put together a list of everything they've argued so far, because
that'd be a good list.
I think I'm going to do that. That would be a good list of everything that's been argued.
Stargazing alibi is probably my favorite, though.
Yeah. Which one?
The stargazing.
Stargazing,
alibi.
Yes. So, yes.
That on a cloudy night. Never done it before.
On a cloudy night, he likes to go look at the stars, and he just happened to be doing that at that exact time.
Right.
So now somebody else did it, according to them. They can't just say it and then it's going to be let in. They're going to have to produce something, right. And it's all under seal. The judge is going to take a look at it and go, okay, you got a case here, you got an argument, or you don't. Where on earth do you think they're going with this?
Other DNA in the house, probably. That's the only thing I can probably think of, is that house is so riddled with fluids from other people, I'm guessing, over the years.
Yeah.
That they're able to find someone or something to try to pin it on. That's the only thing I can come up with.
I feel bad for any human being who they're going to start going after.
So again, just a thought experiment. This was a college house, mm-hmm. which had lots of tenants in and out of there over the years. Lots of people in parties over the years. I mean, I don't know how many deep cleanings the place has had, but I don't think it probably had a lot prior to the evidence teams going. It's one of the reasons why they had such a hard time with collecting DNA or any evidence in this case, is because it's a college house.
Yeah.
So it's going to have lots of
everything.
DNA all over the place. Yeah. And so, I mean, I can only imagine, again, who knows, you know, this is my small child brain just thinking that I think they're just trying to find anything in that house they could pin it to. And they probably found lots of DNA to try to pin it to, but who knows what'll stick.
Yeah. I mean, and they'd have to go on their own investigation, find these people and then drag their names through the mud and then get sued at the end of the day.
I still think what they're trying to do, again, if I was this person, I wouldn't try to drag anyone else through the mud, because that's someone else you can cross-examine and they get eliminated from the potentiality. I think, you know, so the only thing that pops in my mind is like Richard Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Allen, Delphi case. So you have other people that were around those girls that actually had done heinous crimes against children, who actually were in jail before and actually then died, you know, and they're no longer around.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would think that what she might be trying to do is find the DNA of someone who's no longer living on this planet, who actually had a record, and try to pin it on them. I don't know if you can.
I don't know if you can. What I'm afraid of is that they're going to go after the surviving roommates. And I think that would be horrific for them. But it seems to be, you know, if you look at the world of pro-burger folks out there, and there's not a lot, but there's a handful. Their reasoning oftentimes seems to land on them. And just because it was odd, they didn't call 911. But if you actually look at the context of everything, of how this all played out, you get it. Like, these are young girls that, you know, inexperienced in life, inexperienced in this sort of trauma. It's not crazy that things played out the way that they did.
So you think she might be trying to go after the surviving roommate and maybe someone in her life that actually took the lives of the girls?
I think that seems to be the only thing in my mind that they could possibly credibly, because I think there's nothing to that. These are victims here, but they've already gone through so much. Yeah, I can't imagine that.
I think that'd be rough for them to do that. That's a really risky move. The closest I think she might come to it is kind of like what Howard Bloom is talking about in his book about some drug-related deals or something like that involved, which, again, she might try to link it to a roommate or roommates, past tense, you know. So it could have been some jilted, you know, drug deal boyfriend or something else. So there might be a possibility of that, and you might be able to find DNA from someone like that in that, you know, in the place.
I just hope they don't, because
you know, you can't go after dead people. It's there's a lot of sympathy there.
I think if you want a guarantee, again, I think there's already plenty of guarantees that he's going to be killed. Just the thumbs up picture alone, I think, sealed the deal. But if you go, I mean, I don't know another road they can go down. I mean, if you're trying to save this guy's life, or you're trying to introduce some sort of reasonable doubt, that seems to be the only road that some people seem to get tripped up on.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, reading Howard's book and everything else, you know, that we've looked at, I think the only chance she has of reasonable doubt from what we've seen so far that's been released is that kind of idea of, because again, that pool party was the only time we saw any sort of potential linkage with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that pool party, drugs, it's a stretch, but again, if she's going for an ounce of reasonable doubt in one human being on that jury, that might be the only play.
Or the drug thing. I mean, I guess that, I mean, there is an argument there. You know, something connected with maybe a parent of one of them, or their own behavior, their own.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, their own. I don't know if they were drug users. I have no idea. But if they were, if they did get some from some source, they're not there to testify. So you could basically blame the dead people and say, this was a big whole thing gone wrong. Koberger has nothing to do with it. This was a bad drug deal. They're all dead. They can't testify to it. We don't know who the dealer is that did this, but this is what happened. And I don't know. It's a stretch. But I mean, look at the Karen Reed case, where they went on the stretch of these people beat him up in a house with evidence.
So it's an interesting comparison. So this is why I think this is a hard one for defense to try to do using a drug angle here, because what you have is if there was drugs involved with the deceased girls and the boyfriend, the challenge there is there's an expectation of stupid college antics because the kids are in college. Mm-hmm. But these kids did not have, you know, it's not part of what we've seen, part of their behavior arc of really bad. In other words, you're not dealing with drug addicts. You're not dealing with drug dealers from anything having to do with their backgrounds, their history, their arcs, their families. You know, a little bit maybe, but you're not having anything pronounced, as opposed to the Karen Reed case, where you have a long history of overindulgence of alcohol. Mm-hmm. That is very well documented. That's very well substantiated by numerous people, even by Karen herself. And so I think the difference here is the fact that this could easily be explained as a college one-off one night after a football game. But it's not like a been a prevalent arc in the victims' lives. And so I think that's a hard thing to press. It's a hard thing to press. And again, because you're not going to garner, I think, a lot of sympathy on the defense side by trying to do that. Because again, you're trying to taint an image of children.
Yeah.
That otherwise would have been healthy, beautiful kids growing up and moving on to the next phase of their lives, as opposed to adults in the Karen Reed case that have made life choices at that point to overindulge in alcohol systematically over a period of time. So I think it's a hard press.
Well, they got to taint something, like a nasty Easter ham that has been sitting in the fridge for 4 weeks. Otherwise, they got nothing. And that's what they're going to try and do, it seems. I just, and the idea of it being a drug deal gone bad. Look, that sounds lovely if you're watching Breaking Bad, or you've watched a lot of, you know, documentaries about MS-13 or something, where it's like, yes, that sort of shit can go bad, but it typically doesn't happen in a small Idaho town with four college kids who might have been getting weed or ecstasy or whatever the hell they were getting. I have no idea what they were getting, if anything at all. Those don't tend to go to that level of bad. There's none of these kids were sitting there like on a witness list to testify against some corrupt drug dealer somewhere where they have to get rid of these kids so they don't do that. I mean, that's not part of the story at all. And that's not really typically how any of this stuff works. Again, it's not like, you know, MS-13 is their drug dealer or something like that, where you would have this propensity for violence to this sort of extreme. Nor does it make sense to kill four different people that, you know, they're not all doing the same things. They all had their own individual lives. Yes, some shared this home. One was just visiting. I mean, it doesn't add up at the end of the day.
No, so. Matter of fact, so as you're talking about that on this line of thought with the drug angle that the defense might be going for. So here's what we've talked about. Again, Koberg is innocent until proven guilty. But if it is him, we've been able to point out very few flaws in his execution, because he executed this, if it was him, pretty flawlessly. But here's another one where I think he never planned for getting caught. And here's how also. He staked the house as a venue that he could conduct this. I don't think he chose the victims, potentially because of who they were. I think it was a safe target for him to attack because of all these other factors. But the girls and sadly the boyfriend, who happened to be there on a wrong night, they are beautiful people, meaning that they actually, their social profiles, their arcs, their friends, their relationships, their families, everything says that this alibi or this reason of someone coming in a bad drug deal doesn't fit them.
No, they're not junkies.
So in other words, think about this. If the house was the house it was, and the inhabitants of the house happened to be dirtbag junkies, well, then we have a lot more to work with if I'm defense.
Yeah.
But not these girls. Yeah. Not the boy.
No.
I think he chose the house and not necessarily, again, I know there's a slight connection maybe that we may find out about, but I think he chose the venue above the people, because if he's choosing the people, wrong people to choose. Again, if he really thought about it, this is a group that you have close families, say healthy says that there's going to be a lot of things that you're not going to be able to have an alibi on or any other reasonable I mean, there's no other conclusion you can come to.
No.
That's why I think Ann Taylor is having a hard time on defense, because how do you pin anything else on these girls?
You don't. Because you can't. You look like a monster if you do, and yes, that's not going to play well, yes, to a jury. When it does eventually come time for sentencing, let's assume he's found guilty. How much weight, in your opinion, should be put on what's going on in this guy's mind and how broken of a brain that he has? Because that's what they're trying to argue with the autism. That's what they're trying to argue with this and that. Clearly, this is a guy who had a lot of problems and had even written about it. The visual snow, the lack of empathy, the realizing he didn't have any empathy. But just because you have a lack of empathy and because your brain's not working quite right doesn't necessarily give you a free pass to not get killed in prison by the state or the federal government just because your brain is like that if you carried out these sort of crimes. You know, but that's something the government does, you know, put into account when it comes to a capital case. How much should that be considered here in the idea of sparing Koberger's life versus, look, you did this. Yeah, your brain's fucked, but we don't care. The world is better off without you.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that's a tough question always. But here's what I do know. What matters is what the families want.
Yeah.
That plays a big part of it. And also just the knowledge of he can't be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, this type of broken brain does not get fixed. Because, you know, here's the only credit I'll give Koberger. Again, innocent until proven guilty, mm-hmm, was he tried hard for a lot of years to try to do something to fix the brain. He's very aware of it, and he couldn't fix it.
Yeah.
His dad and family, who seemed to love him dearly, tried.
Mm-hmm.
And when all these efforts for so long can't fix it, I don't think it's, you know, and I don't think it's a fixable brain. So unfixable brain, family desires, law. I think that's what's ultimately going to come down to the sentencing, you know, because again, that sentence, you know, that's a really personal choice for a lot of people.
It is,
you know, life for a life kind of thing. But at the same time, though, I think you'll save the state a lot of money by keeping them from being fed for a long time and housed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if your rationale for it is, can he be rehabilitated? No. Can he ever be a contributor to society? No.
It's more like, do you have grace on the dog that has... can only be an attack dog, and there's nothing else it can do because it knows.
And it's interesting. So again, these are questions just to think about that I don't think there's really answers for. And that is, are you doing him a service or a disservice by helping him end his life?
Yeah.
What will he experience? I mean, what's more cruel and unusual, leaving him alive or killing him?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, those are just things to really think about and ponder. You know, it's quick and easy to think, well, a life for a life, and he is as mm-hmm. heinous what he did, absolutely. And so they should take his life. True.
Mm-hmm.
But what's greater suffering for him? I don't know.
And I know a lot of people look at that, well, it's much more suffering for that person to be behind bars and deal with the consequences for their actions. Not if they don't think they did anything wrong.
Yeah, so here's one factor that says to me, death sentence, and that is people will want to come talk to him.
Yeah.
And thereby he will be the person he always wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. This would prevent that.
Yes. So if he is granted clemency and guilty and he's not given a death sentence, he should be in isolation, never have contact with another human being again.
I agree with that. I think the thumbs up picture is what sealed it for me. If in fact he did this and in the next morning he's sitting there, there's no need for you around anymore.
There's no need for you around.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly right. Especially when being around will give you...
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it? That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.